Chapter 16. Arthur awoke to the sound of argument and went to the bridge. Ford was waving his arms about. "You're crazy, Zaphod," he was saying. "Magrathea is a myth, a fairy story. It's what parents tell their kids about at night if they want them to grow up to become economists. It's..."
"And that's what we are currently in orbit about," insisted Zaphod.
"Look, I can't help what you may personally be in orbit around," said Ford, "but this ship..." "Computer," shouted Zaphod. "Oh, no. Hi there. This is Eddie, your shipboard computer, and I'm feeling just great, guys, and I know I'm just going to get a bundle of kicks out of any program you care to run through me."
Arthur looked inquiringly at Trillian. She motioned him to come on in, but keep quiet.
"Computer," said Zaphod, "tell us again what our present trajectory is." "A real pleasure, fella," it burbled. "We are currently in orbit at an altitude of 300 miles around the legendary planet of Magrathea." "Proving nothing," said Ford. "I wouldn't trust that computer to speak my weight."
"I can do that for you, sure," enthused the computer, punching out more ticker tape. "I can even work out your personality problems at 10 decimal places, if it'll help."
Trillian interrupted. "Zaphod," she said, "any minute now we'll be swinging around to the daylight side of the planet," adding, "whatever it turns out to be."
"Hey, what do you mean by that? The planet's where I predicted it would be, isn't it?"
"Yes, I know there's a planet there. I'm not arguing with anyone. It's just that I wouldn't know Magrathea from any other lump of cold rock. Dawn's coming up if you want it."
"Okay, okay," muttered Zaphod. "Let's at least give our eyes a good time. Computer,
hi there, what can I..."
"Shut up, and give us a view of the planet again."
A dark, featureless mass once more filled the screens, the planet rolling away beneath them. They watched for a moment in silence, but Zaphod was fidgety with excitement.
"We are now traversing the night side," he said in a hushed voice.
The planet rolled on.
"The surface of the planet is now 300 miles beneath us," he continued.
He was trying to restore a sense of occasion to what he felt should have been a great moment. Magrathea. He was piqued by Ford's skeptical reaction.
"Magrathea. In a few seconds," he continued, "we should see air."
The moment carried itself. Even the most seasoned star tramp can't help but shiver at the spectacular drama of a sunrise seen from space. But a binary sunrise is one of the marvels of the galaxy. Out of the utter blackness stabbed a sudden point of blinding light. It crept up by slight degrees and spread sideways in a thin crescent blade, and within seconds two suns were visible, furnaces of light searing the black edge of the horizon with white fire. Fierce shafts of colour streaked through the thin atmosphere beneath them.
"The fires of dawn," breathed Zaphod, "the twin sons of Sulianis and Ram."
"Or whatever," said Ford quietly.
"Sulianis and Ram," insisted Zaphod.
The suns blazed into the pitch of space, and a low ghostly music floated through the bridge. Marvin was humming ironically because he hated humans so much. As Ford gazed at the spectacle of light before them, excitement burnt inside him, but only the excitement of seeing a strange, new planet. It was enough for him to see it as it was. It faintly irritated him that Zaphod had to impose some ludicrous fancy onto the scene to make it work for him. All this Magrathea nonsense seemed juvenile. Isn't it enough to see that a garden is beautiful without having to believe that there are fairies at the bottom of it too? All this Magrathea business seemed totally incomprehensible to Arthur. He edged up to Trillian and asked her what was going on.
"I only know what Zaphod's told me," she whispered. "Apparently Magrathea is some kind of legend from way back which no one seriously believes in, a bit like Atlantis on Earth, except that the legends say the Magratheans used to manufacture planets."
Arthur blinked at the screens and felt he was missing something important. Suddenly he realized what it was. "Is there any tea on this spaceship?" he asked. More of the planet was unfolding beneath them as the Heart of Gold streaked along its orbital path. The suns now stood high in the black sky. The pyrotechnics of dawn were over, and the surface of the planet appeared bleak and forbidding in the common light of day. Grey, dusty, and only dimly contoured, it looked dead and cold as a crypt. From time to time, promising features would appear on the distant horizon. Ravines, maybe mountains, maybe even cities. But as they approached, the lines would soften and blur into anonymity, and nothing would transpire.
The planet's surface was blurred by time, by the slow movement of the thin, stagnant air that had crept across it for century upon century. Clearly, it was very, very old. A moment of doubt came to Ford as he watched the grey landscape move beneath them. The immensity of time worried him. He could feel it as a presence. He cleared his throat.
"Well, even supposing it is..."
"It is," said Zaphod.
"Which it isn't," continued Ford.
"What do you want with it anyway? There's nothing there."
"Not on the surface," said Zaphod.
"All right, just supposing there's something. I take it you're not here for the sheer industrial archaeology of it all. What are you after?"
One of Zaphod's heads looked away. The other one looked round to see what the first was looking at, but it wasn't looking at anything very much.
"Well," said Zaphod airily, "it's partly the curiosity, partly a sense of adventure, but mostly I think it's just the fame and the money."
Ford glanced at him sharply. He got a very strong impression that Zaphod hadn't the faintest idea why he was there at all.
"You know, I don't like the look of that planet at all," said Trillian, shivering.
"Ah, take no notice," said Zaphod. "With half the wealth of the former Galactic Empire stored on it somewhere, it can afford to look frumpy."
Bullshit, thought Ford. Even supposing this was the home of some ancient civilization now gone to dust, even supposing a number of exceedingly unlikely things, there was no way that vast treasures of wealth were going to be stored there in any form that would still have meaning now. He shrugged. "I think it's just a dead planet," he said. "The suspense is killing me," said Arthur testily. Stress and nervous tension are now serious social problems in all parts of the galaxy. And it is in order that this situation should not be in any way exacerbated that the following facts will now be revealed in advance. The planet in question is, in fact, the legendary Magrathea. The deadly missile attack, shortly to be launched by an ancient automatic defense system, will result merely in the breakage of 3 coffee cups and a mouse cage, the bruising of somebody's upper arm, and the untimely creation and sudden demise of a bowl of petunias and an innocent sperm whale. In order that some sense of mystery should still be preserved, no revelation will yet be made concerning whose upper arm sustains the bruise. This fact may safely be made the subject of suspense, since it is of no significance whatsoever.